All right, welcome back into Morning Drive, fourth and final hour here on this Friday. ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're broadcasting live this morning from Kitchen Notes inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel. Big Finish coming up at 9:45, but a busy, busy time in sports going into the weekend today. And, of course, last night, and that's where we'll kick off this final hour of the show, NHL, the PGA Championship. And also the NBA, as Golden State defeats Portland last night 114-111, up 2-0 in their best of seven in the Western Conference Finals. And Derek Mason, I think Portland might have had their best opportunity slip through the cracks last night.
Yeah, I think they did. They were up 14, 15 points third period. And then Golden State went on this run. Portland couldn't hit a shot at one particular time. And once, I think it might have been in midway, I think we're 8 minutes left, somewhere around there, Golden State took the lead, and they didn't look back. You can't give a team like Golden State an opportunity to go on a run like that, and you, in turn, don't hit a shot. Golden State went on a 14-3 run and just buried Portland. And I think that was Portland's opportunity to steal a game. Now, would they have won a series? Probably not. But I think it would have gave them a little confidence. Now, I think this thing, they might just sweep Portland. If not, I think Portland wins one game, probably game three. And then game four and five, Golden State taking in. And I think Golden State is going to win the championship in five games, whether it's them playing Toronto or playing Milwaukee in the
Who's the better matchup for Golden State?
The better matchup probably.
Like who gives it a tougher series?
The tougher series would probably be Milwaukee because of their length. This is a extremely long team in Milwaukee, because I don't think anyone, especially if Durant's not playing, I don't think anyone on Portland, on Golden State team can guard Giannis. But they are so long, and not just long, their big guys can shoot three pointers. Lopez, who is the other guy? I forget his name. Start with an M.
Mirotić.
Yeah, Mirotić. And Millsap. Not Millsap, but I forget.
Middleton.
Yeah, Middleton. Those guys are 6'8" and above, and they can step out and shoot three-pointers. And so not only are they long, but they can shoot from the outside. Portland, Toronto doesn't have that. You know, they got Kawhi, but Kawhi is not enough. You don't know what you're going to get from anyone else on that team. Things may be up and down with it, but at least if you face a team like Milwaukee, I mean, it's going to be hard for you to beat them. I still think they're going to win, but it'd be harder for you to beat Milwaukee than it would for you to beat Toronto.
Did you guys see the quote from Steph Curry's brother, Seth, where he said, without making it sound like he's saying the Warriors are better without Kevin Durant, basically they're more difficult to defend, they space better, they're quicker, and they play at a different speed. Is there anything to that?
So let me ask you this, Derek, because I think their style of play was what made them so fun to watch before KD got there because of how they moved the basketball so well, how fast it went from side to side. You could switch angles and guys would be open, and they were truly just like – not truly, but like a three-point shooting team. I know Draymond Green was a better player then than he is today, but is there something to that when KD got there, they became more of the – in vogue ISO pick and roll 1v1 type of offense, that they went away from what made them so fun to watch in the first 3 or 4 years of their creation? Does that make sense?
No, I think what happens is you ask anybody else in the
league.
You ask anybody else in the league, and they'll tell you they're more difficult to beat with Durant. You ask Steph's brother, then his brother going to say, well, yeah, they're harder to they're easier to beat when Durant's on the court.
Right. I don't mean
that's
like
not the case.
I don't mean harder or easier, because obviously Kevin Durant's great. What I mean is if you hate hero ball and you love sort of the motion and the movement and the flow, is there something too that Kevin Durant turned it more into a normalized 2019 isolation hero game? I'm not saying that's not tougher to beat because Kevin Durant's an elite player. But I just remember them like 3 years ago, they moved the ball so much more than they do now.
You know why? Because there wasn't it. Before Durant got there, there was really only two scorers, Clay and Steph. That was it. Iguodala can shoot the three-pointer, but no one really
Draymond
feared.
Draymond Greenwood, he'd average probably 40 to 50
but no one feared Draymond. No one feared Iguodala. So, you know, they can move the ball freely because ultimately at the end, as long as Clay and Steph have the ball, that's all that matters. Well, when you insert Durant, you got more people that can take a shot. Now it goes from having two guys to three guys. So the ball moves differently. But it's still at the same point. You are not going to beat Golden State in a seven-game series when Durant is playing. No way, no how. It's just when Durant went down, I guarantee you there was a sort of a sigh of relief for those who have potentially play Golden State like, whew, he's gone. Now we got a chance. With Durant on the court, you have no chance to beat them in a seven-game series. None whatsoever. It was luckily Cleveland did it that one
with
year.
LeBron, yeah.
But then Draymond was gone. And Iguodala was hurt.
Well, yeah, because he kicked
kicked LeBron.
He kicked LeBron in the kibbles and bits there and got suspended. And they probably would have won that series, right?
Yeah.
If he doesn't get suspended, he probably
would have. Because they were up 3-1.
Right.
So there's no way you're going to beat Golden State when Durant's on the court. No way, no
way. Probably true.
All right now, it is your chance to win not one, but two pairs of tickets to see Nashville SC take on Charlotte Independence. Right now, be caller 5-615-737-1025. You will secure yourself two pairs. That's a total of four tickets for Nashville SC against the Charlotte Independence, and that is at First Tennessee Park tomorrow, which is Saturday, May 18th, and I believe you'll be involved.
I'll be on the call. A couple of announcements from Nashville SC as well. I believe a match coming up in July at Nissan Stadium against Indy 11. So two games announced at Nissan Stadium. They're going to play in October at Nissan Stadium against North Carolina, and then they're going to play, I believe, in the summer in July at Nissan Stadium against Indy 11. So a couple of Nissan Stadium gigs for them. They also acquired some MLS players this week that are going to be joining the team next year, 2020. So lots of things happening on the soccer front as we build up towards an MLS season. In the meantime, you got one pretty good USL team right now rocking and rolling over there at First Tennessee Park.
Two monster blowouts. We'll explain next on Morning Drive. Welcome back into Morning Drive, 9:14 here on this Friday, ESPN 102.5. The game, we're live this morning from Kitchen Notes inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel. Now, why do you got to pull that out?
Do
you want to discuss what you have in your hands
tell
right
the,
now?
Tell the audience that you're not talking. I am talking about the 2019 preseason Athlon Sports College Football Magazine. It is in my hand. There it is. You can hear it.
Does it got that fresh print smell?
It does. It's on newsstands coming up this weekend, so go buy some magazines, man. College football season is not as far away as you think. Plus,
99 days.
Plus, reading, holding, touching a magazine, I still enjoy it, man. You're going to the beach in the summer vacation, sitting at the pool, whatever you're doing, there's just something to be able to – you can take it. You can break the highlighter out and just go to town on this bad boy. So, you don't have to have the internet all the time.
Can I just smell it real
You don't
quick?
Have to look at a screen all the time. You can actually hold paper. Just recycle it.
Let me touch it.
For the love of God, recycle it.
Let me touch it.
Hey, Braden.
Yes, Chase.
Can we get an address so we can charge you for this ad? Thanks.
No.
Okay,
You don't get to charge me for anything.
I'll have Jane.
It's in my contract. I'm an Athlon Sports employee as well, so.
But once you end up bringing some to the station,
once I get
my copy, you know where it stays for the duration. It stays in the men's room.
What was that, Chase?
Nothing.
Jeez.
Kale.
All right, so a couple of things.
Why not the coffee table? Can you just leave it? Don't red flag the magazine.
No, I'd spend hours where I read that.
Okay.
You know? All right, so the NHL last night, I thought, and I can't, maybe Chase or maybe hockey guy out there can send me a tweet or give us a call. I can't recall, and I didn't watch a ton of this series because I've been a little dejected with the Preds, but Boston beat Carolina 4-0 last night. They get the sweep 4-0. They won 4-0, 6-2, 5-2, 2-1. So only one game remotely competitive, outscored 17-5. Can you ever recall a conference finals or even a Stanley Cup final that was basically a biblical beatdown?
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of I would, and Chase, you could check sweeps on this. I know for a fact, I believe Colorado swept Florida in like 96 or whatever it was with Patrick Waugh and John Van Beesbrook. Although I think game four went to like triple overtime or something crazy like that. But there have been sweeps in conference finals and in Stanley Cup final, especially if you get a story like Carolina. One of the upstart teams, if you want to call it that. I'm not trying to be insulting here, but they were sort of scrapping and clawing the whole time just to get in, and they finally get in, a bunch of jerks. And then, of course, Boston's been one of the premier teams all season long as one of the best teams in the NHL for the entire year. So when you get that matchup in a conference final, it's not a surprise that it went this way, just like it's not a surprise if Golden State smokes Portland, right? It's not a surprise. I think we have far different situation in the Western Conference where you have St. Louis, a team that was not a wild card, that played elite-level hockey for the better part of 3 months down the stretch and was one of the best teams in the Western Conference from a win total and point total standpoint over the final 3 months, playing against a team that we all thought was one of the favorites to win the Western Conference when the season started, in the middle of the season, and when the playoffs started. So I think you have a much more normal matchup, and that's why you're seeing really, I think, very entertaining hockey games in the Western Conference Final and not so much in the Eastern Conference Final. I think either way, because Boston won, you're going to get a great Stanley Cup Final. I think either San Jose or St. Louis gives Boston that becomes a really good series. I think stylistically,
going six games either way, you think?
I would think. St. Louis plays a different style of game than, of course, San Jose does. And San Jose's got all the, you know, with Carlson and Burns that can activate into the offensive zone. They have so much, their power play is off the charts. So, like, I think the casual fan, while they may not like San Jose as a story, because it's just sort of like a, it's just sort of there. Like, I think for the East Coast fans, San Jose is just a thing. It's just there. It's not positive or negative. The hockey team stylistically could draw people in. I will say this, and Chase, you could speak to this. St. Louis, when's the last time St. Louis Blues won a Stanley Cup?
They have not.
So that is a story that could draw people in, I think. Historic, original six franchise with Boston going against a team that's, you'd call it maybe an upstart, smaller market team in the Midwest that's never won a Stanley Cup.
I was just going to say,
that could be an interesting story.
Nationally, do you think people in the Northeast, in Canada, in the South, in the West Coast care about mid-market, middle America, St. Louis hockey to draw in?
I think in every sport, everyone likes a first-time champion. If you've never won a Super Bowl, if you've never won a Stanley Cup, if you've never won an NBA title, national championship in college football or basketball, if you've never won one, I think people recognize the first and what that means to people. So maybe that's me like romanticizing sports as like a teenager or something. Like I just think it's a fun story. Obviously, Predators fans hate the Blues. I get it. Stepping away from your Predators fandom, can you look at St. Louis objectively and say, man, it's a really cool story for someone to get their first cup. Imagine what that would feel like for us, right?
What,
like,
what's the better story within the St. Louis story? The original six first time or a rookie goaltender in Binnington leading this team? Well, not necessarily leading the team, but a rookie goaltender on the way to winning a Stanley Cup.
I mean, if Boston wins another cup, I don't think it does, especially with the city of Boston, with as much love as they've gotten. Over the last 15 years, 12 parades or whatever it's been in the last 15 years in all the major sports, they've won a cup in the last, with Tim Thomas, just in the last 10 years. So I don't think that resonates, but it's a big market team and an original six franchise and all this stuff. That plays to some degree. I think, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm being too romantic about it, but I enjoy seeing a franchise do something for the first time, even if I've got to put aside my own fandom to appreciate that. Like, if the Lions win a Super Bowl as a Packers fan, it doesn't make me feel good. I don't like it. But you put that aside and you go, man, it's those fans have suffered through a whole lot to get to that Super Bowl. I think the same could be said for a team like St. Louis. San Jose, to me, is just – I don't think people care one way or the other about San Jose. It's like they've been to the Stanley Cup Final recently. You know, they're not really a diehard hockey market. They're fun to watch, but do people care about them on the East Coast? I don't know.
737-1025. Let's go to Tristan in Hendersonville next on Morning Drive. What's going on today, Tristan?
Hey, nothing much. I turned. I need a hearing aid because I'm deaf years old today. But besides that,
happy birthday. Is that what you're saying? It's your birthday.
My birthday's in November.
Oh.
So what? Say this hearing aid thing again. I didn't get the joke.
No, from military. I have enough deafness that I need a hearing aid now.
Oh, gotcha.
So, no, moving forward, as far as the Hockey Talk is concerned, what's going to bring me more in as a fan is going to be St. Louis versus Boston. St. Louis because of a couple things. You're going to have Jordan Binnington versus Tuukka Rask, which that series would be essentially a goalie battle and a story of a city that's never won a cup. I was in St. Louis a week ago. Trust me, Gloria is getting on my nerves, but still, that city wants it bad. As far as San Jose versus Boston, what you have with that series is you're going to have line battles. You have the most offensive-defensive pairing of Burns and Carlson, and you have a bunch of players between Logan Couture, Evander Kane, and a struggling goalie, Martin Jones. So you're going to have a line battle type of series. Either way, I think the casual fan is going to be more drawn to the St. Louis versus Boston series. But I think ultimately, I think all hockey fans just don't want Boston to win because Boston just had a parade how many days ago? So honestly, I think it's the country versus Boston right now.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think sports fans are just sick of Boston having success in any sport.
That's probably true. I'm that way. And the thing is I don't really mind that Boston team. Like, as a fan of hockey, now Brad Marchand gets on people's nerves, but like, they've got they've got players that are so good that if you're a diehard hockey fan, you appreciate how talented they are. San Jose, it's tricky though. Like, some of those guys bug me a little bit. Like, Evander Kane is not a guy I want to root for and see do well. I love the Jordan Binnington against Tuukka Rask. I think, as Tristan pointed out, that's a really fascinating story. So, a team that's never won a Stanley Cup, would it sting as Predators fans to sit in this market and watch another Central Division team who, you dominated in the postseason 2 years ago, 3 years ago, you know, go win a cup before you? Yeah, that would be fairly upsetting. There's no question. But if you step back from that and you're just a casual fan, you knock Boston off with a rookie goaltender and you've never won a cup before, I feel like that's at least somewhat of a sellable commodity to some degree.
Let me piggyback off of what Tristan just said there. The Gloria thing for St. Louis is because a lot of teams do certain things when they have success or there's a song that is played, whether it's pro sports or college sports. Is that the most annoying thing, the Gloria thing with St. Louis? Is it the Sweet Caroline thing with the Red Sox that
Boston
did
Red Sox,
it?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I feel like sports fans get annoyed if that's not your thing. Like, if you're a Red Sox fan, you probably love it, although maybe there are some Red Sox fans that think it's annoying and over the top. Is that the most annoying thing in sports as far as a celebration or a song, the Gloria thing for St. Louis?
So, relative to Nashville, I don't think – I mean, Gold on the Ceiling is such a good – now, I will say, I am glad they transitioned from all Tim McGraw to half Tim McGraw and gave us Black Keys, because I'm a huge Black Keys fan and I don't care as much about Tim McGraw's music. So I love the fact that we went rock and roll when they scored a goal and not just cliche traditional Nashville country.
It was never all Tim McGraw.
That's true.
A piece of Tim McGraw like it does now, and then it went into Gary Glitter, and they got rid of Gary Glitter and went to Gold on the Ceiling.
Right, and I don't think Gold on the Ceiling is a song that gets on people's nerves.
Well, like, no, but it's also modern too.
Very, very true. So I don't know. Like, I don't. The Blackhawks have their thing, obviously. I can't recall going to another stadium. And this is what I always tell, this is why I do the whole don't take the bait thing. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't recall going to another stadium and just being super annoyed with, like, something that a stadium does. Now, there are fans individually who are annoying, right? Like a drunk guy sitting next to you or whatever. But I don't, like, when I go to a new sporting event that I've never been to at a new stadium, I try to sort of take all of it in as it is, right? Like, you know, when you go to Fenway, you're going to sit in a tiny little seat. I'm a big guy. I'm not going to fit very well in that tiny little seat. I'm probably uncomfortable. But you experience it, and it's part of the charm. You go to Wrigley before the renovations, and it's like, this is kind of a dump. But, like, you appreciate the charm of it. And it's, you know, when Dallas says Stars during the anthem, like, I don't get offended by that stuff. You just sort of – every stadium and every sport does its own thing. I think you just try to appreciate what they have, and some things you're going to like, some things you're not. But I just try to take it in. I don't really get annoyed. Like, I'm way more annoyed by like the drunken, angry fan that's trying to fight me for no reason at all because he's an idiot than anything else that happens in the stands. Like that Gloria thing doesn't bother me too much, and I'm sure Blues fans love it.
Because I golf with a guy at Hermitage who's a season ticket holder for the Preds. Now you think you're analytical and you delve deep into things like
is he talking Corsi scores on like the eighth green.
He sit there. He one day he tells me, he goes, you know, one thing I'm not a big fan of, and I said, what? He goes, when the Preds score and they do their thing and they say to the goalie, hey, you suck. He goes, well, don't say. And he goes, I'm not offended by saying you suck. He goes, but you're devaluing the achievement of your own team by saying that the goaltender is not that good. And I'm like, that is way too analytical for me.
Now, I will say I do find that it's a rowdy fan base chanting and taunting a goaltender.
I love it.
Don't overthink that. I will say this, though. When a team beats another team in a playoff situation or a game or whatever, and then that fan base comes in and goes, oh, man, see, you know, Alabama beats Georgia in the SEC. Oh, Georgia sucks, man. Well, what you've done is devalued your accomplishment by winning the game. That one I don't understand. That one doesn't make sense. What you say is, man, Georgia was really, really good, and we somehow figured out a way to win. And you don't. That way you're adding value to your accomplishment. So that one I don't understand, especially in an era of college football where how and what you win and who you beat and how you do it matters to the committee, right? Like, you want to pump up your resume as much as possible in these subjective sports. College basketball is the same way. You don't want to be a team on the bubble in the SEC trying to get into the NCAA tournament saying, like, oh, we beat Belmont, Middle Tennessee, they suck. Like, you don't want that. You wanted to say, No.
Good.
Beating Belmont's great. That's a good win. Like I never understood that part of it. Devaluing your team's accomplishment. I don't care about in the stadium about a goal. That's silly.
The big finish is coming up in less than 20 minutes. It's Morning Drive live on a Friday from Kitchen Notes on ESPN 102.5 The Game. All right, welcome back into Morning Drive. ESPN 102.5 The Game. The big finish coming up at 9:45. Colin rocking a little, is this a little Coolio Gangster's Paradise?
Oh, yeah, it's Coolio.
Where'd you find that at?
I was raised on this, man.
You believe that,
No, that's actually true. Colin? My dad actually played this for me when I was young.
So that Dangerous Minds would have been 94?
I think so.
Were you born?
I was born in 98.
I don't know how you can be raised on something that happened 4 years before you were born.
I just sat in the car, and we would listen to this while we were driving places.
Okay.
I feel
you
really
could be
old
raised
now.
On old music, Brady.
Okay, no, that's true. That's true.
We are working with a guy
right
now who was born in 1998. Think about that.
I was in high school. Yeah, it's terrifying.
Yeah.
I cannot even drink yet.
Good.
Like right now you can't drink?
Yeah, I'm not 21.
Oh, my God.
Jeez.
Right. I guess I should have done the math on 98.
There you go.
When do you turn 21, Colin?
Well, June 25th.
Yeah, it's right around the corner.
Yeah, I'm coming
what
up,
What do we do? Nashville Knights. Chaser, you need to indoctrinate this young pup into Nashville Knights on June whatever that date was.
Then I'll officially become a 102.5 The Game employee.
There you go.
Yes, once you hang out with Ricky and Chase on Broadway, you're official.
So yesterday, PGA Championship, Brooks Koepka comes out and basically takes Bethpage Black to its knees. He shoots a 7-under-63 yesterday, and he had a one-shot lead over Danny Lee, but then the rest of the field was just it felt like miles back. But all of a sudden this morning, Dustin Johnson is 4-under through 8. He's now 5-under overall, 2 back of Brooks Koepka, who tees off in the afternoon wave. And you were talking about it during the break, about just how so many guys had a good day, yet they're just miles back.
I'll leave you to sort of break down the course and how it sets up and can the guys make a run or whatever. I did not see what I noticed when I was looking at the leaderboard last night, because I didn't get a chance to actually watch as much as I wanted to, was that I didn't see as many big names like nipping at his heels. But then again, nobody was really – it was like everybody was sort of there. So I think today, as we go through today, who makes a big run from like even par 1-under up into that – you know, -3, -4 territory that actually puts themselves in contention for the weekend. And right now it looks like Dustin Johnson's making a huge push already today. And so I don't know who that's going to be. Patrick Cantlay looks like he's making a run. You showed me the leaderboard a second ago. Koepka's just on such a mission right now. I think Tiger missing the cut would be a big storyline.
Plus two yesterday.
And I think, and I don't know where they're projecting the cut line to be, probably plus three-ish, mm-hmm. plus, you know, depending on what. I mean, if Koepka goes and shoots a 65 today or something,
right.
and he puts it at, you know, minus 12.
Well, but to your point, though, yesterday you had guys like Ricky Fowler and Jason Day
yeah, he
and
was
Phil
a,
Mickelson.
That's
they're
true.
All minus one, but they're still looking up at Dustin Johnson. Like,
right.
what the heck happened today? Or
right.
like Brooks Koepka.
Right, exactly. And so there are a ton of dudes in that like, someone's going to make a charge today. And it looks like already Dustin Johnson's one of them. If you know, Ricky Fowler was pretty close. Who's going to make the run today? I do think that Ricky Fowler's a guy that I just personally root for because he doesn't have a major. He's probably one of the best American golfers to not have a major, right? I don't know who would be higher than him on that list. Like, who would be?
Probably nobody.
So if you're an American golfer rooting for American golfers to win majors who have never done it before, like the Blues, right?
Mm-hmm.
Never won a cup. I think Ricky Fowler's the guy you root for a lot there. So it's sort of today what I'm looking for is just who are these guys of that group, that of names that you know, that push their way up the board and actually give themselves a chance to win over the weekend. I will say this, though. That leaderboard on Sunday at Augusta, like starting at around hole, I don't know, starting at like 7 or 8, it was just so epic where you had 10 or 12 dudes that were all highly recognizable names all charging up the leaderboard to try to get to, I guess it was Molinari, right, who was leading most of the way
mm-hmm.
on Sunday. That is probably not going to be replicated. You probably can't replicate that because that – I mean, who are the guys that made the push on that Sunday? Ricky Fowler, Dustin Johnson, Tiger Woods, Francisco Molinari. You know, who else was in that mix? DeChambeau was in that mix. I mean, we're talking about – I don't think Jason Day, right? Didn't Jason mm-hmm. Day make a really strong push at the end of that? Rory was – I don't think Rory was around. But that was an unbelievable Sunday leaderboard. I don't know if you can ask for that again.
You know, it's funny. We talk about, like, the psychological aspect sometimes of sports and, you know, let down games and trap games. One thing that's very difficult, and you're going to see this today, when you – and I saw this on the Golf Channel last night. When you shoot a 63 in a major on the first round, and they listed all the guys that have ever done it, the average score for round two for said golfer who shot a 63 in round one is 72.5. So it is very
difficult
to come back the next day and perform at that type of level for a second round.
And that would probably be best for the tournament if he comes back to earth a little bit. I will say this, though. So obviously it par is 70 at Bethpage, right, which mm-hmm. is very different than a 72 at Augusta. So when you look at the 63, shouldn't they separate the six? Like, if par is 70 or 71 or 72,
sure.
shouldn't they be separating the 63s? Because if you shot a 63, I haven't looked at the list. How many of those 63s were shot on –
Yeah, I didn't see that, but I totally get your point. Not all 63s are created equal.
Right, like 7-under is amazing,
right.
but like it's not 9-under.
No.
9-under on a round is even more crazy. So how many of those 63s were done at – I'm assuming a lot of them were in the British Open because that's where you can score if you get the wind behind your back and mm-hmm. the greens are huge. And, you know, you can – I assume that scoring is easier at some of those places. So I do want to know – like what I want to know is what's the best 63? What's the best one of all of them?
I mean,
toughest course, par 72, you know, whatever.
It's got to be hard to surpass what he did yesterday because at Bethpage Black, it's really long and the rough is really thick. I think it's like 3.5 inches thick. So you have got to be very long off the tee, but you have to be very precise. And if you look at Koepka yesterday, I think he hit 8 out of 14 fairways, which is pretty good. And when you're precise as he is right now, how do you beat a guy like that? The guy's driving at 330 off the tee, and then he can stick an iron or a wedge to within 15 feet. When you have power and precision, and then you roll it in with the putter, so I'll say the three Ps, power, precision, and putting, I mean, good luck.
Well, and what's interesting is I saw – so here you go. Greg Norman and Nick Price have both shot – at the Masters, there's only been two 63s, and they both shot 9-under – Greg Norman did it in 96 in the first round. Nick Price did it in the third round at Augusta. That's a 63 on a 72 par course is insane. I will say, and I was watching the breakdowns of his approach shots, and they did a bunch of them last night when I was watching highlights, and they were saying that he's taken out, you know, a 6-iron from 205 yards in the rough and putting it on the green, and they're like, everyone else lays up.
Mm-hmm.
No one else goes for it, and he's the one taking these shots out of the rough to go for it, and he's landed it on the green, and you're just going – And there's a reason he's quoted as saying, in sort of controversial fashion, winning these majors is easier than winning a regular tournament because the course eliminates half the guys, and then I only have to, you know, mentally I'm going to be better than another big chunk of guys. All I got to do is beat a handful of dudes, and it's like, that's super arrogant, that's super cocky, but when you've won three of the last seven majors you've played in, that's Tiger Woods' level of accomplishment. That's Jordan Spieth's level of accomplishment to win three out of seven. And if he wins this one, I mean, long way to go. If he wins this one, you're talking about four out of eight?
Yep.
That's a pretty insane stretch of golf.
So you got Koepka at seven. Dustin Johnson is at five under. Jordan Spieth is through eight so far, even on the day, one under. And then you've got guys like Kuchar and Fowler also at minus one and a handful of others. Phil Mickelson is at even par.
What's funny is I'm looking at this list, and not many of these happened in the final round where a guy won. Now, Johnny Miller, 1973, shot a 63 and won the tournament at Oakmont in the U.S. Open. Jack Nicklaus in 1980 at Baltusrol in the first round. Like, he won it, but that was in the first round. What I want to see, how many guys did it in the final round where they went out and just crushed? And the only one that comes to mind is Royal Troon, 2016, at the British Open, where both Phil and Stenson just went absolutely nuts. They both shot 63s, and Henrik Stenson won the British Open, or the Open Championship, I should say. But that's what I – like, to me, it's cool to do it in round one. Great. Mm-hmm. You still got so much golf to do. But the guy who shoots 63 on a Sunday at a major and wins like Henrik Stenson did, or Johnny Miller, like, that stuff's insane.
If you're a Tiger Woods fan, Tiger Woods is two over. That was from yesterday. He'll tee off in the afternoon today. So what you got to hope for if you're rooting for Tiger is that Koepka is two or three over today. He comes back to that four under, five under range, and Tiger puts up a 66 or a 67 today to get within striking distance for the weekend.
Brooks got a 63 last year.
Yeah.
At Belle Reve.
Yeah.
This is like routine for him.
If he was just focused in regular events, it'd be insane what he could do.
Right. So that was in the second round. Tiger Woods in 07 won the PGA Championship at Southern Hills with a 63 in the second round. Again, I'm not seeing anybody who won the tournament on a 63 on Sunday. Like that's sort of what I'm looking for. And really, it's just Henrik Stenson in the 2016 British Open and Johnny Miller at the U.S. Open in Oakmont at 73. Those are the only two that actually did the 63 on Sunday to then win the championship. That's different level stuff.
All right, we'll come back. We'll finish it up with the big finish next here on Morning Drive. That is correct. It is time for the big finish. We do it each and every day at 9:45 here on Morning Drive. We give you what we learned today, what is on tap for the weekend, and of course, we hit you right out of the gate with the Morning Drive Daily Rewind. And Smashville, good morning, and thank you for joining us. It is Morning Drive. We're off and running here on a Friday. ESPN 102.5 The Game, broadcasting live from Kitchen Notes inside of the Omni Nashville Hotel.
Who stayed up to watch the whole thing?
I did.
Oh.
Yeah, I should have. I basically stayed up to watch the whole thing.
I went to bed about mid-third quarter. Did I miss anything when I went to bed and Portland had a 14-point lead?
Short-lived.
Oh, Portland missed a lot of shots.
Oh, man, they were taking shots just to be taking shots. That was their chance to win. That was their chance to steal a game in Oracle Arena. And they blew it. Just like Toronto blew a chance to win in Milwaukee.
The NHL last night, Boston sweeps Carolina. They win 4-0. And how about this from a Stanley Cup conference final perspective? Now, Boston goes back, I believe, to the Stanley Cup for the first time in 6 years. But that series, I mean, Carolina didn't even actually get off the bus and compete. They totally outscored 17-5 over the course of four games. First round of the PGA Championship, and I don't like to say that it's over after one round, but Brooks Koepka might have sucked the life out of Bethpage Black yesterday by just squashing a majority of the field, 7-under.
So
round one,
you tell me. I might go too deep in the weeds here, and Nick, you can tell me, like literally, almost. So
stay out of the weeds. You never can hit your green.
But that's what
he said. Majors are easier to win.
That's what it was.
Than regular events. And then he explained. He said, half of the field has no chance. 40% of the field will collapse. I only have to beat a handful of guys.
Is that cocky?
That's some stones right there.
I mean, technically.
And then he fires a 63 yesterday?
In his last seven majors, he's won three of them and finished sixth in another. You know, he's won back-to-back U.S. Opens, and he's the defending champ of the PGA Championship.
He's tailor-made for this course.
Ooh, I see what he did there. Tailor-made.
Oh, I'm telling you. I hadn't had pancakes in a good while.
This man has had two servings of pancakes already.
Man, these pancakes is like, they're like butter.
Some guys just eat them on air, come on.
It's like butter, man.
Sometimes, Derek,
melt and go out. Oh,
you remind me of my like 13-year-old self sometimes, where you're like, I'm going to go back and get more pancakes. I'm going to go get three. I'm going to get a third helping of pancakes later, guys. It's like a character from The Sandlot. Like, you're like, guys, there's free pancakes.
The Sandlot. Let's talk some Titans with our man, Teron Davenport, Titans reporter for ESPN and ESPN.com. And, of course, the podcast, Talking with TD.
Bell Cow nowadays is a lot different. But yet still, I do believe if you're talking strictly about carrying the football, Derrick Henry is a Bell Cow type of back. But he said Derrick Henry is not and needs someone else behind him. How do you feel? Do you think his assessment was spot on, or do you see Derrick Henry as, especially from running the football, is he a bell cow type of back?
I think from a carrying the rock perspective, he's 100% a bell cow type of back.
We welcome in the Predators president and CEO, Sean Henry. Predator fan that says, okay, Predators, Bridgestone Arena, another three decades. What does that mean for the fan beyond the obvious, and what can you tell us about things down the road in the future with Bridgestone Arena and the Nashville Predators?
Best thing about it is when you talk about iconic memories and buildings and venues, sometimes they take on a life of their own. The one thing they all have in common is they're decades and decades and decades old. And we are in the best possible location for any venue, I'd say, in America, where we sit. What's really nice is with Mayor Bredesen's vision of putting the arena there, he created, you know, the wave of development around the building, that entertainment district, brought it to life. And then when the Titan Stadium was put at the other end of the road, if you will, it really created something really dynamic.
Excited about this story about Uber. They have added a new quiet mode, which means that you have three preferences that you can choose from when selecting a ride. Braden probably wouldn't like this. Quiet preferred, happy to chat, or no preference. I am one of those people that I don't really like small talk in the Uber. I just kind of want to get to where I'm going. I'm not trying to be rude.
It's very rude.
I just want to chill. No, it's not. It's okay to be quiet sometimes.
I'm not being chauffeured. I'm not. It just feels weird to feel like I'm being chauffeured by some limo driver. It just feels weird. So I let them decide how much conversation they want to have. I'll say, hey, you busy tonight? You had a lot of drive. You know, the road's been okay. I'll try to do something with small talk. And if they don't take the bait, then I'll just be quiet in the back seat.
So what
happened? It feels weird to not talk to another human. Just an extra laugh there, Tostin.
Was that the Derek Mason laugh?
I guess. We need to add that.
Put that on the board.
Add that in the drops.
All right. That was the Morning Drive.
Derek never
Daily
had drops.
Rewind. No, he doesn't.
I'm channeling Derek as he's not here to defend himself.
Occasional dump, but you know, that's not a drop. Let's get to what we learned today.
Now, what we learned today.
What we learned today. I learned today that Major League Baseball to Nashville, while it still seems like a great idea on the surface, could very well continue to hit some bumps in the road along the way, which we found out today and in the last 24 hours that the group of people in Nashville meeting with Major League Baseball has been postponed to the summer.
What I learned today, that basically every possible option is on the table for the Preds and Bridgestone Arena and being expanded. Whether that means opening up concourses to the street, whether that means building towers, whether that means adding more entertainment district type stuff to it all. As expected, everything's on the table, and nobody's going to pay for it except for the internal revenue stream. So, very cool.
All right, let's get to what is on tap for the weekend.
It's your guide for the happenings around town and what to watch from your couch. Here's what's on tap tonight. Now, on Morning Drive.
All right, you guys know the obvious one for me is the PGA Championship, but I'll also throw out the fact that tomorrow, and I think it's kind of gone under the radar a little bit, at least on this show, we've got the Preakness Stakes coming up tomorrow evening.
You got a bet for us?
I do not. I'm a little checked out on after, I guess, what transpired at the Kentucky Derby.
So we've got, obviously, NHL, NBA conference finals going on over the weekend. Nashville SC, of course, Saturday night, 7 o'clock, First Tennessee Park. Come on out if you cannot. I'll be on the radio call, of course, 94.9 Game 2, your official English radio home of Nashville SC soccer. So check that out on Saturday night. I'm all in on PGA Tour golf. I love the fact that they moved it up to this time slot. I told you this yesterday. I start watching golf at the Masters, and all of a sudden I start playing golf, and then I'm into golf. And they need to keep me into it as a fan, and they've done that by putting the PGA Championship so close to the Masters. So I'm all in on the PGA Championship. You got the Preakness, soccer, hockey, basketball, all that good stuff over the weekend. Man, great weekend.
Now, I know you're into fantasy from the standpoint of Game of Thrones. So does the name Robert Pattinson ring a bell? I believe he played in Harry Potter.
It was Twilight, Nick.
Schiller's
it was Twilight.
No, I don't know the name at all.
Okay. He has been selected to be the new Batman for the new Batman movie coming out in a year and a half.
How many Batman movies are there?
There's going to be a new one.
Like, how many different people have played Batman? Like, a half a dozen people?
Yeah, six.
Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer.
Clooney. Bale.
Christian Bale was the best, right?
And then the last one.
Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck.
Who
so this would be six.
Christian Bale's the best, right?
Yes.
Keaton?
Best Bruce Wayne, I think, is Keaton. The best Batman
makes sense.
Is Keanu.
And Game of Thrones, obviously, series finale. They got a lot of splendid to do. They need to get everything wrapped up on Sunday night. They got a lot of storylines to get wrapped up. If Bran ends up on the throne, I'm going to be pissed. It needs to be either Arya or Sansa or Jon. Make the Hollywood script ending. We need to have some good stuff happen in the end of the Game of Thrones. Also, Lucas Nelson tonight at the Ryman Auditorium. Willie Nelson's son playing at the Ryman. If you have not listened to Lucas Nelson music, go check him out. He's spectacular.
All right, that's going to do it for a Friday edition of Morning Drive. Stay tuned. Willie and Darren are coming up next. We'll talk to you Monday morning at 6 here on ESPN 102.5 Game.